آپ ایس بی ایس اردو کے ساتھ ہیں۔ اس طرح کی اور کہانیاں sbs.com.au/اردو پر سنیے۔Hi, I am Rehan Alavi and welcome to Fast France, a podcast that looks at inspiring stories of non-Muslims who embrace fasting during the sacred month of Ramadan. What motivates non-Muslims to fast and what does this teach them? What insights are gained and what are the challenges experienced? How does this lead to solidarity, reflection and connection with the spirit of Ramadan?
You know, you had a white Anglo-Australian basically just fasting with the Australian Muslim community. I often say to people that what I experienced during that month, it is a taste of what many communities in Australia experience.
In this episode, I am speaking with Craig Foster. Craig is a retired Australian soccer player, human rights advocate and sports analyst for Sting. He played professionally from 1988 to 2003, including for the Socceroos. He was also the chief soccer analyst for SBS until 2020. Craig fasted during Ramadan in a spirit of brotherhood, friendship, and solidarity, aiming to break down cultural and religious barriers for a better world. I have a pleasure of having Craig Foster. He is a household name in the world of soccer for Aussies and for all the people who know about soccer in Australia. Welcome to SBS.
Yeah, great. It's nice to be home.
That's right. This is your second home. When you were growing up, how much exposure you have to Islam?
Oh, I had no exposure until the good fortune of football and I think also SBS, but that was after my football career. But you know, football sends you around the world as a professional and play for Australia against many other countries, and you get to know people and have the opportunity to become very close to all of the communities here in Australia, all of our beautiful multicultural communities. And so while I was playing, you come into contact with, you become teammates with, you play against, you know, you become friends with a whole range of people from different ethnic, cultural, religious backgrounds. Islam was just one of them.
Do you remember the moments when you start realizing in terms of demonstrating of solidarity with the Muslims? What were the moments? Who inspired you?
Because of the career and the life I've had, you know, I left when I was probably 15, 16, left what was at that time and still today extraordinary, beautiful area up in Lismore, as you say, northern New South Wales, but very monocultural. And I walked in my mid-teens to group, team, club situations with different ethnicities, and I was able to live with Croatian community, with Serbian community, Maltese community, and many others, and that really opened my eyes to the point where later in my life, I would be and still are a member of the Australian Multicultural Council, for example. Now, on the Multicultural Council, one of the core issues that we contend with, you know, on a quarterly basis is around what's now termed social cohesion. An annual social cohesion report by the Scanlon Foundation in Melbourne, which is world leading. And what it does is essentially is ask Australians of all different backgrounds, and difference, whatever that happens to be, about how they feel in Australia, their sense of belonging, their trust in political institutions and other Australians. And it tries to map and get a sense of, you know, how well our multicultural nature is working, whether it's real for everyone. And it's really important. Now, through that, you know, I would say 6, 7, 8 years ago, quite a long time ago, I started to see that. And those communities in Australia who are expressing a sense of isolation, of marginalisation, of victimisation, typically the communities who I then, in that position and as you say, a prominent broadcaster, I try and use my position and my platform to help those communities who feel most marginalized. Now, that can be through, some of the media coverage that I see. It might be through friendships and people that I know who let me know that, you know, their community needs help. Often people will ask for help, communities, leaders. For the last 20 years, the Muslim community in Australia has been attacked in a lot of different ways, and I could see that happening. So I felt a responsibility to help. But also we had a young kid who got in trouble and, I had to run a campaign to get him out of a Bangkok jail. That was Hakim Al-Arabi. And through that process, that kind of brought me closer to the Arabic and Muslim Australian community.
What led you to participate in Ramadan fast?
So, you know, annually, all of the religious festivals in Australia, I try to support as much as I can. You know, you can't get everyone, so often you're going to miss one or two out. I try to support our cultural, ancestral and religious communities and their ceremonies and celebrations every year, just because I like to be in a position where I'm saying to the rest of Australia, listen, you know, these guys are Australian, you know, and therefore no one has a mortgage on what it means to be Australian or to look Australian or to speak Australian or to dress Australian or to eat Australian. Right? And there's many people in Australia still who feel that that is the case. So I try to lift up communities, particularly those who are most marginalized or some of our smallest ones, and some of those happen to be religions. You know, I'm a huge advocate for Australia's secular nature and the fact that our religious faiths and people in Australia have this really important right to practice their own religions, provided that they do not discriminate against others who also have the same right. And I think that's a marvelous part of Australia that I want to really not just protect but promote as a member of the Multicultural Council. When it came to the fasting, it was a little bit different. So, you know, Hakim was released from Bangkok prison after 77 days of a pretty harrowing, very harrowing experience for him and reasonably harrowing for everyone in the campaign. And he went back to Melbourne. And then I think at the start of COVID, which would be probably 5 years ago now, he actually called and said, would you do an iftar dinner with me? And that was the intersection of my work on the Multicultural Council, also my friendship and brotherhood with Hakim, who, you know, I just helped to get out of prison, and also, you know, the Scanner Foundation. I knew at that time that this particular community needed more help.
Those who do not know the background of Hakim's story, can you just briefly wrap that story? What would happen actually?
Yeah, basically he was a 25-year-old Bahraini footballer who had fled Bahrain having been tortured for participating in a peaceful pro-democracy demonstration back in the Arab Spring time. And he found himself in Australia. He was granted asylum. Then he went on his honeymoon, got married, went on his honeymoon with his young wife to Bangkok, thinking that it was safe. And when he landed, the police got on the plane as soon as it hit the tarmac, put him in immigration detention. A couple of days later, put him in prison. So he stayed in prison for over 70 days. And during that time, Bahrain was trying to work with Thailand to extradite him back to Bahrain, despite the fact that he was a recognised refugee, which is against international law. He played my game of football. He actually played at that time in Melbourne for a club called Pascavale. And so those people asked me to help. So I ended up travelling to Bangkok twice. I went to Zurich to see FIFA and went to the UN to see them and basically kicked up enough of a fuss that Thailand ended up saying to Bahrain, we're not going to send him back. We're going to give him back to Australia.
Are you planning to fasting in this Ramadan as well?
I'm not planning to fast. So what happened is Hakim said, can you just do an iftar dinner with me and then we'll share a photo or something? And I said to him, listen, I'll be happy to go further. I suggested, why don't I fast during the whole of Ramadan with you and then every night we will share an iftar photo of mostly prominent, imams or, you know, community leaders or politicians of Muslim faith, and I would share that every night. So when I would have the breakfast dinner, we'd just take a photo and I would say, Ramadan Mubarak to whoever it was that day, and I did that for the whole month. And the reason was simply, it was hard, so I wouldn't like to do it again.
Let's say I want to ask the next question. Did it affect you psychologically or physically?
Well, psychologically, no. I mean, because, you know, I was just doing it for a bit of an experiment, really, and I was doing it to try and just help Muslim Australian community. But it's not easy. I said, oh, I'll do it. And then I found out I couldn't have coffee, you know, I couldn't have water, I couldn't have anything. And so, I was able to live that experience, though, and those things are really valuable because I was able to just step into the shoes of Australian Muslim community, you know, as I would do for any other faith or community in Australia. And obviously I was, you know, I said to people, you know, this is not about the practicing of the faith. What this is about is just solidarity, to say that this community is being attacked. I don't agree with that. I don't believe that's what should be happening in Australia, and therefore I'm happy to step. But it ended up being one of the most valuable things I've done, a great experience. One of the reasons is because of the pushback that I got from some sections of Australia and the way that they tried to respond to what I was doing. You know, you had a white Anglo-Australian basically just fasting with the Australian Muslim community. And I often say to people that what I experienced during that month is a fraction of, but it is a taste of what many communities in Australia experience, if not periodically. Well, certainly, if not every day, periodically. So, you know, First Nations Australians, you know, the racism that they cop, you know, Muslim Australians, the racism that they cop, the community and so many others. Because, you know, for that month, I just copped it. It was just a flood, you know. And to me, it was just a bit of an experiment. You know, that's something I'm very used to.
But did you realize that you were able to spark a debate in Australian society, positive debate for a change? You are a celebrity, you are a star. Your action is going to impact the society?
So I knew it was going to impact. So, you know, in a way, it's a provocative statement. I mean, it should be very easy, but given where Australian society was at that time, and I don't know, perhaps still is today, I knew that it was going to provoke certain sections of Australian society. And I often say to people, you know, at some point later when I can be bothered, but I've got the time, I might publish that communication that was sent, because it was extraordinary. The vitriol and the hate was really quite amazing. You know, it's visceral. And that's what so many communities in Australia get. Now, as you know, looking the way I do and speaking the language the way I speak it and dressing the way I do, I don't get, you know, no one looks at me askance in Australia, right? You know, I'm in the central zone. You know, I'm seen as the kind of normal, if you like. And therefore, that was one of the few times in my life where I've actually been able to experience what other people who are marginalised here actually experience. And that provides the impetus and the power and the motivation for you to keep going and work on anti-racism work and in the Multicultural Council and try and help Australia be better.
By your experience, what do you want to advise them? Be ready for the tough time?
I think when they're young, you know, that I'm sure that it would be fine for them. But, you know, I support them. I support any Australians who are supporting other Australian communities. And in particular, what I would say to those people is, well done. Keep your eye and keep your brain, your sensibility and your heart attuned to those communities in Australia who are unfairly being attacked.
This has provided a comfort that you are able to get huge support from the Aussies?
Well, it provided a comfort to say that, you know, the overwhelming majority of Australians support multiculturalism, support multi-faith Australia, and support our secular nature, and therefore, you know, they're able to see, you know, what a simple act. But from 85% to 95%, those are the Australians who it's good to see a well-known athlete, former sports person and broadcaster doing that, because it might make them think, well, you know, if Craig is comfortable to do that, maybe what I'm hearing or reading from my, you know, area where I'm being informed is not right. Because if I trust him or I like him, you know, and I feel that I have a relationship with him, you know, through media, this is confusing. Because all of a sudden, if he's doing that, well, you know, maybe I need to think about it. You know, it's not just diversity and it's not just you know, including people in whatever it is that you're doing. It's what multiculturalism is about, is making every Australian feel equally Australian and be equally valued in the way that I naturally am. I think by the end...
By the end of the Ramadan...
I'd wasted away. I had to go slow.
Yeah, that's all right. Thank you very much for coming to LBS Studio and become a part of this podcast series. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for joining us as we explored fasting with Greg Foster in this episode of Fast Friends. You can listen to other episodes of Fast Friends where I have chatted to Swain Valgampola and Father Patrick McInerney about their Ramadan experience. For more SBS podcasts, visit sbs.com.au/audio or download the SBS audio app. इस तरह की और कहानियाँ सुनना चाहते हैं? Apple Podcast, Google Podcast या Spotify या जहाँ से भी आप podcast सुन सकें।